So in both groups this afternoon, the question came up, of course, from a reasonable place of asking exactly, what is this quality that we call mindfulness or awareness? And so mainly the topic of the talk tonight is trying to answer that question, and also making the option to explain the difference between concept and reality. And this seems very abstract, but I'll make it concrete in relationship to what we try to practice in a moment-to-moment awareness. So through the process of mindfulness, the word mindfulness is sati in Pali, which is the language that we have as a reference point from the text that explain the meditation. And this word sati means to remember. And it's not to have a memory of something that happened earlier on, but it's more to remember to be present, to recall the attention. I'm just waiting for these people to settle. So through the process of mindfulness, there's a real sense, an intention to wake up to what life really is about. Not that we don't know what life is about, but we do know it in a way which is not exactly the way that the meditation is explaining it, which is this understanding of reality, or a meaning of life which includes more than what we perceive habitually. So it's understood in the teachings that life has a much deeper texture in a way than what is being met at the surface. And when I say that we live at the surface, often we live from this place of mental activity. And a lot of this concept or conceptual inclination is cutting ourselves from other aspects of life, which means that we can truly have a benefit of having both. Having the concepts that are very useful to think, to know, to plan, to evaluate, to choose what we wish to do. And yet to also have the possibility of living a life which doesn't depend only on concepts, on thoughts, on mental constructs. So it's just much more rich to have both. And I think it's a very important aspect to hear and to understand that we're not cutting ourselves off from thoughts. If we would do concentration practice solely, meaning only, then very naturally we would want for thoughts to stop, to be with solely only the object that we've chosen. Whatever object, a candlelight, an image, divinity. Some people choose divinities, gods, right? Divinity. Or the breath. We can choose any object, actually, to concentrate on and be absorbed with. Then, of course, the thoughts are a problem because we want and our intention is to stay with that object, and therefore we push away, in a sense, everything else that is not the object chosen. This is one of the ways that we practice concentration. And we did include today an aspect, a little bit of an aspect, of that quality to calm the mind, to have a sense of stability. But not only, meaning that very quickly we were invited to notice also, oh, what is the state of my mind when I'm present? Or when there's a bodily sensation or pain? What is the attitude? What is my relationship to not focusing and to not be able to meet the breath because I'm not finding the breath or because there's distraction and there are thoughts, too many thoughts maybe, whatever? Then we're noticing, we're asked to look also at the aspect of the relationship with, which means that there's a broader field of experience. And not only the relationship to keeping the breath as an object. It's a very, very important anchor. We begin with that and we return or we reconnect with that anchor, which is kind of a base, you can say, or a ground, right? So that we know, again, to have some stability and where we are settling. If we're not settled and if we don't have that base, then there's a very good chance that the meditation is not going to be meditation, it's going to be thinking, which means living at the level of concept. And thinking, as my teacher would say, is not meditating, because thinking we think, right? And thinking about the breath is not feeling the breath. So to have these understanding and to have these notions, we begin to say, okay, what is the difference? Is it possible to have a felt sense or a presence which is not based on thought? And people ask this afternoon, how can I be aware of the breath without thinking about the breath? And of course, it's just so normal to have that question because we're so used to use thought. It's a habit. And why don't we realize that we have this habit? Because we're lost in that mode. And therefore, it may prevent us from living an experience which is just more full, more rich, more in connection with the reality of that experience. And that experience meaning maybe the feeling of that sensation, where we don't need the filter of thought to meet the experience. So that is a very important step, meaning that concentration and mindfulness are different. Concentration, there's a real sense of just staying grounded and there's a steadiness. Right? The steadiness here is inclined towards steadying the awareness, the attention. And in a Vipassana retreat, which is given in this way, the interest of the part of the concentration is not to have only calm, it's to understand exactly what is happening, what causes suffering, what causes sorrow, what causes grief, and what causes freedom from suffering. And the Buddha was very clear. He said, there's only one thing that I'm interested to teach. And during all these years that he taught, over and over again, he was telling the people that came to him, I teach one thing and one thing only. There is suffering and there is an end to suffering. If you're interested in going in the direction to the diminishment of suffering, or the diminishment, you don't need to use the word suffering, it can be insatisfaction, right, of life. It doesn't need to be this terrible thing that we're living, but the insatisfaction, then please take this teaching to heart and apply it. Meaning to live the experience. And this is exactly what we've been doing today and part of yesterday. To put ourselves in a situation where we're placed in the living situation, experiencing the reality instead of thinking about the reality. And there's no doubt that reflection, intellectual understanding, has an aspect of wisdom. If we're here, we heard about the teaching. If we're here, maybe we read a book and we were interested in what we read. And so we thought, okay, it says you have to meditate. And so we come to meditation. So one aspect is very, very clearly defined at the level of understanding intellectually or conceptually. Just now, that's what you're doing. You're listening and it goes through your thinking mind. And then maybe after you said, oh, this is interesting. Maybe, you know, there's some piece here which is to be taken to heart. And then we apply it. And in the application, the way that we've been kind of really applying ourselves very, very intensely, I must say, because there's no other way that we really meet ourselves, is to put ourselves in a situation where we see what is happening in the presence of thought and what happens when there's a moment where we don't rely on thinking to be living our life or to experience our life. And we begin to taste the direct experience, what the Buddha called the wisdom mind. So this teaching of the Satipatthana, which is actually the kind of only manual that we have in relationship to meditation, says this. This is quoted, okay, from the teachings. It says, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of Nibbana, which is peace. One of the words for Nibbana is peace, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. So the direct way is nothing else than mindfulness in relationship to different experiences. And this is what we are doing, moment after moment, applying these teachings in a very clear way and very simple. This teaching is very ancient. We can say that we practice in a way, in the same way that the Buddha practiced, and it's been practiced since 2,600 years now. So it's been tested. So there, if there's doubt, there may be doubt, you know, in our capacity to maybe put these teachings into practice for ourselves. But I think that because they're so ancient, we can trust that the path is leading to more freedom and to more opening and more peace, whatever word you want to use. And naturally, the insights or the understanding which come from that experience have arisen today. There's no doubt that for all of us, there's one moment of clarity and we're not lost into thinking, and the experience was full. And for those of you who've come to several retreats, well, these moments, these sparks of understanding, of wisdom, have just, you know, been arising, and therefore that's what makes us come to retreat again. Because we know. And it doesn't go through the thought or the thinking. Maybe we don't know what exactly we've understood. But we know that there's a quality of intimacy where there's a sense of fullness and we don't feel so separated from life. And that's what the experience is. That's what we call insight. where there's not the sense of, oh, I'm feeling that I'm beside myself or not in my shoes. And those moments really kind of give us the trust to continue to practice. Even if we don't have the certainty that this is what has happened today, for example, why don't we have kind of the quality where you say, oh, wow, this is really amazing. I see so much of my body pain, but I can be with it. And it's fantastic because I can see that I'm not drowning in pain. Or maybe I am, but I'm seeing that I am. You see, these are the type of understanding that we see because we're so caught and so torn in a way that we want only peace. And we don't want to go through this process where there's a learning in relationship to being with what maybe is a little more painful. And naturally, this is so for day one. And since it's a weekend retreat, it's one full day and then you're gone tomorrow. So that's the kind of difficulty when we have weekend retreats. But trust that you want, you know, to know a little more. But there's no doubt that the meeting with ourself reflects also what is present. So it's not very often, it's not that the sitting posture, of course some of it is creating, you know, some pain. But it's also the conditioning and what we come with. And also because we are facing ourselves in a way that we're absolutely not used to. It's coming right on our face. And we don't yet have the ability or the strength of mindfulness to hold it all. So we'll lose balance. And it's by losing balance, by really getting frustrated or irritated or aversive, that we learn. Rather than being completely lost into distraction, just imagine at home you would have just gone out and, you know, went to do something else, for sure. No doubt that on a retreat, this is why we come in a situation where we just don't run away. Of course, we may run away in our minds, but we don't run away from our cushion. And so when we come back, we have this quality where we've gone through something difficult and we find the balance again. So this is the process of mindfulness. So we are not trying to get a peaceful state. It's much deeper than that. Deeper meaning that we are really allowing ourselves to live a life where we don't depend. Our happiness or our peace doesn't depend on having certain conditions. And of course, it's more demanding. And yet, there's a possibility of greater openness. Were we to do only concentration, then maybe we would reach a state of calm, momentary state of calm, but as soon as that condition changes, right, we go back home, we don't have the conditions for that quietness to be there, to be present, all of the difficulties come and we don't have an ability to be with them. Because we are just reducing, in a way, our practice to nourishing and to maintaining that calm. In the Vipassana practice, the mindfulness calling for the wisdom, the understanding, we go through the meetings with what is difficult. And we learn. We really learn from that connection or contact with bodily sensation or with mind states or with emotions that are painful slowly, slowly, but from a ground where we can come back as much as needed to the anchor, right? To find again a state of balance. So it's a very clear combination of a certain kind of steadiness, concentration, to be able to see more deeply the reality, not from the thinking mind, and also include everything that is presented to us slowly, slowly. So these four foundations of mindfulness are very clear. He talked about the first foundation of mindfulness being the mindfulness of the body, exactly what we've been clearly meeting today, giving a lot of emphasis on body awareness. Then the second is being mindful of what is called the feeling tone, which is what? It's the texture or the taste of an experience. And that taste of experience happens every moment. And the taste is, it's of three types or three kinds: pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Right? Every moment we have this pleasant or unpleasant or neutral because we sense, right? We have a body. There's sensory experience. So every moment, you know, you find yourself, oh, here I am sitting. Oh, it's pleasant. Suddenly the next moment, the most fantastic pleasant state can turn in a millimeter and in a millisecond into an unpleasant. Or unpleasant can turn into pleasant. One teacher says, you don't worry. There's going to be a moment when pleasant is going to be switching to unpleasant and unpleasant to pleasant. Meaning that what we become really in contact with is that nothing stays the same. And that also is a fantastic understanding. Because we know at a certain level, yes, of course, things change. But if we lived at that level of reality, not thinking, oh yes, things change, but really meeting reality and knowing that it's changing, we wouldn't be constantly trying to get more of pleasant and less of unpleasant. Knowing that everything changes anyway, that we don't have much control, whether in our life, for the choices we make, or in our meditation when we sit. And so very naturally, this quality of pleasant or unpleasant or neutral comes in the practice. And we are being able to be mindful of that in the same way that we're mindful of the bodily sensations. So what this aspect is really showing is that we can be responsive, respond to life, instead of reactive. And the whole of the practice, if there's one purpose or aim, is to shift from that space of being constantly in reactivity in relationship to what is happening. We don't realize how reactive we are. And the reactivity is causing the pain. This pushing and pulling, the wanting and not wanting, having preferences and having this and that for my life. This is a cause for pain. And he saw it very clearly. And as a friend say, what the Buddha saw, he saw for himself. Now, as the Buddha suggested, you don't need to believe me. You need to verify this for yourself. So go and practice and check it out if what I'm saying is true for yourself. Therefore, there's a real sense of putting ourselves into the position. And that's what we're doing on a retreat like this, where we're sensing the life. And it's different from thinking about The third foundation of mindfulness is being mindful of thoughts. There's a whole area here, realm of experience that we can include and that slowly does get included in the practice when we have a process that unfolds over some days, where we know how to relate to thought instead of being governed or controlled by them, without needing to chase them. In this Vipassana practice, it's really important to understand that we're not getting rid of thoughts. It would be senseless to want to get rid. Of course, when we meditate and we're with body, the first intention is, okay, let me get rid of all these thoughts, because it's the thoughts that create the trouble here, right? But it's not about getting rid of thoughts. The body breathes, right? Its function is to breathe. And the mind's function is to think. It would be totally senseless, and it would be really putting too much effort to try to have no thoughts or chase thoughts. But we learn. So the third foundation of mindfulness is learning how to work with thoughts. And really, in one phrase, because what we give as an instruction in the beginning can be valid the same way that if we have people have done 10 years of practice. It's to be aware of the thought instead of being lost in the thought. And this is exactly where there's a difference between concept and reality. Concept meaning I'm lost in my stories. That's all. Not only lost in the stories, but usually I believe that the stories are more true than the reality. And that's amazing, because usually the stories are much more dramatic than the reality. So check if that's true. And here there's a whole realm. It's so fascinating to be able then to open to that field of experience where you begin to see awareness has this capacity to really shine the thought, and you're aware of thought and not getting completely swirled and lost in it. That's the capacity of mindfulness. In the same way that we will also be including at one point the emotions. Thoughts and emotions, being aware of sadness, of happiness, of joy, of tranquility, of whatever states. And then the fourth foundation, which is the last, is it includes everything actually, which is called all phenomena. And that you can say very precisely in a process of meditation. I like the way Sayadaw Utajaniya frames it. He says, everything that is being done in a day, like brushing one teeth, one is aware. Transition, going from one place to another, walking, bending the arm, lifting a chair, every single activity is included in the relationship to awareness. So every single moment. So it's very important, because some people think that it's only about sitting, and that the posture is confining the meditation to, okay, when I'm in meditation, I'm sitting. And other than that, okay, we just, you know, go and do the walking for a stretching. And all of the rest of the time, I'm not meditating. But in a way, that meditation is a way of life, where there's the quality of sustained awareness or presence, which is accompanying us with everything that we do, every moment. And the good news is that it becomes more natural. The more you practice, the more natural it is. And from experience, I can tell you that the mind is very cooperative at one point. You know, it's exactly like learning anything. You learn, you know, to go on a bike. How many times are you going to be falling off that bike or learning to swim? And suddenly, it goes on, the momentum goes on by itself. And here exactly the same way. There's a point where the mindfulness reminds itself to be mindful. And it's a fantastic moment. I remember of that first moment when I had that the first time. I wasn't sitting at all. And suddenly the mind reminded itself, oh, but be mindful. And it was mindful without having all this effort and energy to be placed. Because what happens is that the mind really has a pleasant feeling when it's just settled where we're present. And I'm not saying that it's tomorrow. It really requires some practice, but there's less interest to be somewhere else. And a little more interest to be, oh, here, because we're in contact, we're in connection. So it's, if you've had a hard day, it's normal. And if you really hear my words, it does become much more, not simple, but easier when we give ourselves the opportunity to relax and not try to run away. It's usually the extra effort that we put in to be mindful that loses us into energy. So we, not knowing how much energy, we usually lose much more energy to try to change things than the energy that's needed to just be present. And that's normal. You're going to have to go through that, because the loss of energy, and if we're tired at the end of the day when we haven't done much, it's because we've constantly tried to be somewhere else or to have another experience or, you know, to try to fix, to manipulate, to control. And that's very tiring. And so there's no doubt that today many of us have had, if not several moments, maybe all day like this. And therefore, at the end of the day, we're totally exhausted. So we learn. This is really about a balance of the middle way. And the middle way in relationship to energy is not falling into extremes. And the extremes are indulging, can you say that word in Hebrew? Because I see several people. Do you know? Sorry.
I know.
Indulging meaning being complacent. letting ourselves.
Lit aneg.
Great. Yeah? Is that? Yeah, meaning, you know, aloof. You just, being indifferent and indulging and not staying attuned. So one extreme is that we don't try. So, what does it matter? There's indifference and that's kind of indulgence. And the other extreme is too much effort. Where we're pushing and forcing, and this forcing and pushing comes out of will. The will, which we usually do, right? But here, will doesn't work, because will will place us out of the moment. It's going to be placing out in wanting to do, wanting something else, because that's what we find in the mind, the will to have something else. So these are the extremes, and the middle way is that quality of mindfulness, which has an aspect of activity in relationship to wanting to show up. We need to show up. And when I say show up, meaning to have an intention, right? To meet the breath. We've had this invitation today. To meet the bodily sensation. Otherwise, we would just, get lost and just allow ourselves to be in fantasy world. And there's nothing wrong, but being in fantasy world, we're just lost. So there's an intention to come and to meet the moment. show up, but then mindfulness has this receptive quality, active on one side to show up, to be present, and then to not interfere. And that's the receptive. Meaning receptive, not using so much energy that then we interfere in the process where awareness is here, is present. So it sustained itself. The attention or the awareness is sustaining itself. And so we learn this middle way between active and receptive and not falling into the extremes. That's the way that the teaching is explained. So in relationship to saying a little more about the mindfulness of the actual experience rather than thinking, I'm going to be using a very direct example. Just be present. We hear a sound, right? The vibration of that sound hits the doorbell. There's consciousness, there's awareness, right? So we know that sound. So that's mindfulness of hearing. Okay? I tried not to hear the sound. Can you not hear this sound? No, because you're aware. And it's fascinating because this is the experience. Now, most of the time, we're not aware of this primary experience of hearing that sound, right? This has a meaning. For us, it's the meaning is the end of the sit. Right? Yuppie! I hear the sound and I finally have a break from sitting meditation. And most probably because we're kind of so focused on the meaning, we didn't even hear the sound. We're focused on the meaning and we say, oh, I hear the bell, I can't get up. I hear the bell, I can't get up is an overlay on the experience. It's the thought. It's the thought. The gong, the bell rang, it's the thought. So as I said, it's not a problem to have the thought. But we know that the thought is not that experience of hearing. Right? That primary experience which happened is as important, and usually we miss it. And it's like that for everything. In the same way that when you go to a restaurant, you have a wonderful menu, and there are many, many dishes. Just the other night, this happened to me. And I had all these forms and colors, and I was imagining, and oh, this dish must be good. And then I had this representation of the image of the dish. And until the dish came, I was in thought, in story about the reality. So the menu, however much we can read it over and over again, is not going to give us the taste of that dish, right? And so how much of the time are we really in connection, in contact with the experience which is actual and which doesn't need any thought for it to be experienced fully? So we understand that we're not replacing a way of life for another. We're enriching our life. And why is it enriched? It's enriched because there's a real contact in relationship to felt sense. Thinking about is not the experience. And as long as we are living from that space of thinking, only thinking, there's a distancing from the reality, from the experience, which is the actual experience. Whether it's feeling breath, or whether it's listening to music, or whether it's being with a friend, and we're together, and that quality of connection can be based on conversation and concepts and verbal, but there's also connection which is not at all based on that level. And if we're really present, aware, and that's where the practice goes, we bring it also to that level, there's a greater sense of ease and of peace and of joy and of happiness. So this is the direction that the practice leads us to. So it recognizes what is just when it is happening. Another quality of mindfulness is that it's knowing what's happening when it's happening. Usually, with thought, the thought is happening after it happened, which means that we are knowing, we are aware of whatever it is when it is happening. So it, to be conscious that when we are with the breath, there's the experiencing of the fact that we are experiencing the breath, which is not habitual. Usually we're lost in that experience. We're lost in the object. And that's concentration. And sometimes we do need concentration, and we do have the sense of concentration only. If you go to a movie, I do hope that you get lost in the picture and that you really get a sense of being able to enjoy the movie. If you're there watching screen, conscious of seeing lady, right? You're not going to be enjoying yourself at all. Or if you read a book and you don't, you know, read the content of the book, what is the interest? So sometimes there's clearly, most of our time is spent into, okay, focusing, concentrating, or being absorbed in whatever it is. But the mindfulness leading to wisdom is also enabling the fact of being conscious that we are reading the book, that we are where we are, and we're not lost in the movie. So there's both, and there's a validity and a value to really both. It's just opening up the possibility. In this process, the mindfulness has the extraordinary capacity to not have preferences. This quality of awareness doesn't pick and choose. That's why sometimes it's called bare attention. Do you know what bare attention means? An attention which is kind of barren. It's pure. It's not colored by evaluation, judgment, analysis, which usually is what is happening. So it's that quality of mindfulness which precedes the judgment or the evaluation or the commentary that we have about something, about our own experience, about other people. How much of our time is spent into commentary without saying judgment about, you know, someone else or my own self-judgment, self-doubt? How much is added there? So this quality of mindfulness doesn't have that. When it's really mindfulness, there's just a presentation, and it said that it's just like a mirror. A mirror, right? It sees what is reflected in front, and when the image is gone, there's no taint to what's happened and what was seen in the mirror, right? Another image comes in front, it reflects, and then it's gone. It doesn't affect or alter. With the mind, and when mindfulness is present, it's just the same. So there's kind of a purity. And that's why transformation is possible, actually. And it's said that it is a purification process, because mindfulness really has this quality of purifying kind of the taints that may appear in the mind, the colors or the coloring, the taints. And very clearly, there's more and more a sense of being able to be with, meaning open to, recognize and be open to, rather than react. Or comment, or judge, or analyze, which is usually what comes afterwards. So the very big difference is that we are giving more space and that gap before the conceptual mind jumps in is prolonged. It's more and more available, it's more present, and this is what we refer as being mindfulness. And naturally, mindfulness, which leads to wisdom, to understanding, because it understands that at one level, how it gets caught into fabrication, into construct, into storytelling, and how there's a possibility of release. And the word release is this capacity to get unbinded. There's an unbinding. We're not so tormented and bound by conditioning, bound by experience. More spaciousness. And so that's the invitation. I really like to quote the Utejaniya, who says, "This practice is not difficult, yet it needs to be constantly cared for." Meaning that we care about our practice rather than forget about it. And he's very interesting in his way of teaching, because he's very open. And he is probably the teacher who says, every moment, whatever the conditions, whether you're at work, whether you're on the toilet, whether you're eating or in the shower or in your bed with your partner, he really speaks like that. There's a possibility of bringing in this quality of awareness, which infuses the quality of mind. And it's fascinating because he says these words. He says, you need to be aware continuously, whatever your activity, whatever your posture, from the time you wake up till you fall asleep. It is really important that the mind keeps being aware. Whatever you do, it is the awareness that is important. So you see how he underlines it, right? Very clear. He says, this requires right effort. In our context, right effort means to keep reminding yourself to be aware. Now, it's persistency, he's saying. It is not energy used to focus hard on something. So it does not require a lot of effort. And he ends to say it should absolutely not require much energy to be aware. Because the awareness, that quality, is again to meet what's present, whatever moment. And that comes to what Charles talked last night about the being mode. When we're being, there's this quality of meeting whatever is. And so why is it that we are not in that reality? Because of the very strong compulsion, conditioning, habitual tendency to want something other than what is presenting itself, what the Buddha called craving. That tendency, that drive of becoming, pushes us out of our home, and home base, really, of ourself. And so it doesn't mean not doing things in our life, not at all. But from what space are we expressing this life? And from that place of contact, there's no doubt that there's going to be probably more done in relationship to whatever aspiration we have, because we're not governed by the torments of the mind that are constantly gripping us, holding us, calling us. And we follow like a little puppy sometimes, you know? So it's fascinating. It's really turning things around. So I'll end here, because a lot of things have been said and many things need to be kind of sorted out and processed within the actual experience. The mindfulness leads to the wisdom, and the wisdom is what leads to freedom. Freedom, not freedom to do anything we want, but freedom from suffering. And that exactly what is going. So that mindfulness has also a very clear sense of protecting the mind from going astray. The mindfulness has a healing quality and a protecting quality. Protecting in the sense of curing, really, when it's present and it's available for us, there's a sense that we are less inclined to fall into the trap of tormenting ourselves in our life. And of course, with the practice, we begin to sense that. And we begin to sense it maybe not a lot, not as much as we would want to or like to, but we do sense this. And this is what gives trust. And the trust is the trust in awareness. It's nothing else than trusting the mindfulness or the awareness. I've used these words interchangeably, right? And one teacher, just a few last words, says, okay, so how can I be more mindful? You know, that's the question that we have. What is it that makes us more mindful, since you say it's so fantastic to be mindful? What is it? Well, there's no secret. You have it already. What makes us more mindful is the mindfulness itself. It's really that quality that nourishes itself. And so what we can do is to stay on the side of being aware rather than get lost into whatever it is that is manifesting, lost in the experience. And that requires practice, and there's no doubt. We'll get lost. And then, oh, here I am, aware of that experience. Oh, this experience is really painful. Yes, it's painful. How can I change it? No, don't try to change. Oh, aware. I'm aware. That's enough. Recognition. Okay, allowing, opening, staying interested. Staying interested in noticing what is happening here. And not having the thought or the mode of, what can I do this to change it? So not going on that side, but more on the side of what is available and what keeps mindfulness awareness present. And the question, if there's a question, is what is happening right now? What is the experience in relationship to highlighting awareness? That will highlight awareness. It will give a spark of light. And, you know, that naturally strengthens itself. There's a strength to that attention. So the journey begins and ends when we face the reality of what is. And it's a truly beautiful journey. Even if you think that's a difficult one and you feel a little bit maybe discouraged or tired tonight, it's completely normal after a day of practice. If there's doubt, just notice doubt, because maybe we had some expectation and it's just not what we want it to meet. And so expectation is part of what we'll encounter. And we keep, you know, just nourishing the journey, whether it's here, whether it's tomorrow when you'll be going out again in life, to nourish the journey. That's the planting of the seed which increases freedom and peace in our hearts and minds. So I'll close just with a quote, which is from Sylvia Boorstein. She gives a very clear definition. Mindfulness is the aware, balanced acceptance of the present experience. It isn't more complicated than that. It is opening to or receiving the present moment, pleasant or unpleasant, just as it is, without clinging or rejecting. That's it. Okay, we'll sit just 2 seconds to, again, find our posture and just have a sense of coming home to the body. Feeling the breath and allowing the words to just settle as best we can. Just hearing the sound. And then very quietly opening our eyes, mindfully meeting this moment as it is. And this we do over and over and over again. Just this moment, one moment at a time. So we'll have a 15-minute break. You're not done yet? So 15-minute break, and then the last sit, which will be held at 9:15. Will be a very comfortable one because it will be lying down, which will allow the body to relax, and there's going to be just a very easeful meditation which will be guided. So I invite you to come back and wish you a very nice end of evening. Thank you for your attention.